Hello, my name is Ray Montgomery. I'd like to welcome you to the Navigating Blindness podcast. And on today's show, we have our employment service team. How's everybody doing today?
Good, Ray.
Great. Good morning, Ray.
Doing great.
Good morning. Well, I wanted to bring you on the podcast because March is Disability Awareness Month, and we wanted to get your opinions about, you know, Disability Awareness Month and break down some myths that we have for this special episode. But before we get into our myth of the day, let's do a brief introduction, and I'm going to start with you, Christy.
Great. Well, I'm Christy Russell, and I am the Senior Manager of Adult and Youth Employment Services here at Bosma Center for Visionary Solutions. And I get the honor of working with this amazing team, and we specialize in helping individuals who have lost their vision or are blind with returning to work after their vision loss. We also work with our youth as early as age 14 in teaching work skills and preparing them for life after high school. And we can work with them up until they're 22. So even if they go on to college and need supports, we're happy to be that resource for them as well.
Matt Edwards, how you doing?
Good, Ray. Thank you. I'm Matt Edwards, and I'm an employment specialist here at Bosma.
Hey, it's Kurt Sutterfield. I'm an employment specialist at Bosma also, the new guy on the block.
My name's Aaron C. I'm the youth employment specialist, taking on all the students in our donut counties and Marion County to help with students with vision loss or blindness transition to the next kind of chapter of their life.
All right. Today we got a good myth. People with disabilities are unable to live independent lives as an adult. And I want to break down this myth because we know this is not true. And I just wanted to get your opinion on this myth right here and how can we dispel this myth? How do you, I'm going to start with you, Aaron, because you are an individual with a disability. How do you get back and forth to work as an adult? And I know that's an interesting question because people don't think that we travel or we are able to be independent. But for you as the person that works within the community and goes out and talk to the youth all over these donut counties here in central Indiana, how do you travel back and forth and get to your appointments?
Yeah, Ray. I mean, honestly, it depends on the day. I do have to kind of keep my finger on the pulse depending on where my schedule puts me. But, you know, for the most part, I'm either in an Uber, a Lyft, a taxi voucher, not so much buses just because with my school, sometimes they don't fall on a public transit line, but always just having three options of transportation is going to be beneficial when you're working with kiddos. You know, they sometimes miss school. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes, you know, they're on field trips or e-learning day. So just open communication with my schools is really beneficial in setting my schedule. So usually I get into a pretty good routine, but, you know, fortunately, sometimes they're on break. Every school is not on the same break as we're learning as adults. You know, you got kids that go on spring break next week, and Kurt's got kids on spring break this week, and I would say Christy's in the same boat. So you just kind of got to be open and understanding that you're going to have different means of transportation. So just, you know, riding in an Uber, I have my taxi vouchers for more of my like weekly transportation. So every Monday I do this with the students. So that's pretty much set in stone, but you kind of got to be open and adjust on the fly. So, yeah, man, always just, you know, having different means of transportation through those ride-sharing apps, transit, and taxi vouchers. So, but yeah, I'm always in some kind of transportation, either, you know, even planes. You know, I just got back from Las Vegas, flying around, playing in sports, you know, so I'm always on the go, I think.
So how were you
I think
able
that's an
to...
important point, right? Mm-hmm. Is that, yeah. I think the assumption would be, if you are blind, right, that you don't drive, which is pretty common, right? However, yeah. I think some people are shocked to hear that someone who's blind could be a remote employee. You know, well, how do they go around? You know, how are they going to get around? And I think that's the awareness piece, is that nowadays, thanks to Uber, Lyft, rideshare, there's lots of ways for people to get around. And some people that have vision and can drive still choose to use other rideshare options. You know, it's not just for people who maybe are going downtown and, you know, want to drive safely after drinking, right? Like it's actually now become a great option for people who can't drive for whatever the reason. But Aaron is the most remote employee on our team. And I never questioned, you know, when Aaron applied for the job, it wasn't, okay, well, how's Aaron going to get around? You know, Aaron knew, he saw the job description. He saw that travel is a big part of this job. You know, it was never a question. He applied for it because he felt qualified to do it. And I didn't need to worry about, okay, well, is Aaron going to get around to these schools via a car like we would, right? Those of us on the team with sight versus how is Aaron going to get there? It was like, hey, he knows the expectations of the job. We discussed it in an interview, what this role is, and Aaron applied, you know? And so I had to make the quote assumption that Aaron would figure that piece out and be where he needs to be. And it's never an issue. And I would say, right, Aaron, like in our time, I can't recall one time that Aaron's been like, hey, I haven't got my ride. I can't be at this school. Aaron, I don't think we've had it happen one time. So
not yet.
Yeah.
The only time we had an issue was when the world shut down and the AT&T servers went out. So
that was the only time. That made it a little hard, right, to access your app. But even then, Aaron had another plan, you know? And so I think that's the awareness on that is, yes, you know, we got to get out of that box of thinking there's only one way to get to and from work, and that some people prefer to not drive their own vehicle and prefer to use a ride share, and that's okay too.
Yeah. So, I mean, outside of work, do you use the same methods to get to work like you do when you're, you know, everyday life, correct?
Yeah. So I mean,
to go work out and do things, and like everybody else, you go use the Uber, Lyft, like everyone else, correct?
Yeah. So, you know, going to the barber, getting my hair cut, you know, I'm an avid lifter. So going to the gym, you know, massage envy. You know, I keep my body loose as a big guy that does a lot of exercising. Yeah, man, I'm just ordering Ubers, jumping in them. You know, everyone's like, oh, well, it's so expensive. And at the end of the day, it's not as much as you think with car payments. Like, I don't pay a car payment. I don't pay insurance. I don't pay gas unless Jessica's yelling at me to help her out. No, I'm joking. but it can get expensive, but you just got to kind of understand the time of days with surges and things like that. And I think preparation really takes away for some of that financial overwhelmingness. Is like, oh man, I don't know if I can afford that. Yeah, there's hot times. You know, you probably shouldn't travel if you can around, you know, 4 to 5, because there's just everyone leaving work that's using these rideshare apps, and it seems to cost a little bit more. And then just understanding, you know, what's close to your house, or what's, you know, sharing a ride with someone, or proximity, because all these things are beneficial when you're thinking about the financial contribution of ride sharing. And then, of course, there's all kinds of vouchers and taxis and public systems that you can utilize. But I'm kind of just really anal about spending time waiting on things. So I'm on it now. I'm a now guy. So you know, I take a lot of pride in my time. So, but if you're okay with sitting around reading, searching through some of your stuff, and you like to wait on things, that's totally fine too. And you can schedule those rides and, you know, be on those bus systems and those lines and Indigo and all those things. But I got to get it done now. I still utilize all those things at work and as an independent adult as well.
Yeah. So I got a question for Matt and Kurt. So as the two employment specialists that go out in the community working with clients who are blind or visually impaired, what are some of the barriers that you face when you're trying to get gainful employment for these individuals?
Something I see kind of like related to our topic here, our myth, as far as, you know, independence is, I don't know, just something I thought of, like so many times we'll go to job interviews with some of our clients, and it's like the interviewer wants to kind of talk to me, you know, because they, you know, they don't realize that, hey, this person next to me, just because they can't see doesn't mean that they can't think and hear and be a normal independent person, you know? So it really like just, it disappoints me more than anything when that happens. And it doesn't happen all the time by any means, but when it does happen, I'm like, oh man, you know, don't talk to me, you know, talk to your job applicant here, you know? Yeah. So
what should the applicant do when the questions are being geared towards you? How do they, you know, advocate for themselves?
Well, the first thing that I do is don't answer the question. If whatever the question is, I won't answer. Not to be like, I don't do it in a rude way, but I
Right.
just kind of, wait for the person to jump in and answer the question. So that interviewer realizes, oh, okay, I can talk to them. But that, I don't know, that's one thing that I do, or I may repeat the question to the person that's sitting beside me, just so, hey, maybe this interviewer realizes not to talk to me. We only go to interviews just, upon request of the person. If it's maybe the first interview they've ever been on, or it's just a nerve-wracking situation, sometimes our folks like us to go and sit in, and that's fine. But I don't know, a few things that I try to do to redirect the conversation, but that does to me show like this person, this interviewer, doesn't think this person could be independent answering their own
Yeah,
questions or something. I don't
I
know.
hate that because it happens not just in interviews. It happens in my everyday life as well. I don't know if that happens to you, Aaron, when you're out at a restaurant or you're out at the mall and they don't talk to you, they talk to your wife or whoever you're with, and that's definitely rude right there. So you got to learn how to, speak up for yourself, and that's something that comes over time. That doesn't come, instantaneously, but as you build up confidence within yourself, you have to learn how to advocate and speak up and say, no, talk to me, not talk to, the person that I'm with, because I'm the one with the money.
I'm just hey,
Just
reach.
last week, I was on an interview. I helped a client with an interview, and it was to help a bit with navigation because the place where she was going to interview at was kind of tight, and to get to the office we needed to get to, it was a little bit twisty, and so it helped to guide her through this space. But once we got to the interview, all my attention. I said hi to the person conducting the interview, and then all my attention went to my client. I watched my client looking for body language and things like that, that if the interview didn't go well, I could redirect them, but interview went great. The interviewer focused on the client, and it was fantastic.
I know we probably talked about this before, but do you disclose that you are a person with a disability prior to the interview? Or is that something you just walk in the interview and just, drop on that individual?
It's up to the client.
Yes.
I usually say that it's better to disclose because you're going to find out sooner rather than later, if someone's got a visual challenge.
Christy, you
Because you probably come with a different approach, and that's the
Mm-hmm.
beauty about our team is that we do things all differently. And I think you really got to pick your spot, I think we just based on experience, we've had better luck with people like not disclosing in a phone interview or a phone screening or maybe in a cover letter or something like that. It's just based on experience. It's like, that never leads to bigger and better thing. But there are situations where you might want to talk about it, if it's a very, I don't know, a borderline job, like, is this going to be appropriate for the person or not? You might want to ask those questions and just talk about it up front. We've had that situation happen too, and good and bad results. So really, I mean, I don't think there's any correct or right or wrong, black and white way to go about, disclosure. It's going to happen many different ways, and you'll have different outcomes, but I don't know. That's my two
Yeah.
cents.
How can
Yeah, I think
go ahead.
it definitely is a personal choice. I think you would find all of us in this field, not just our team, but anyone in the field of helping people with disabilities return to work, would advocate that the individual does need to disclose at least before the offer, because when we talk about assumptions, right? Is that if a person does not disclose that they have a disability or that they are going to need some sort of an accommodation, if they choose not to, then the assumption is there that they can perform all of these job tasks as stated. And if that is not the case, then that employer is going to be probably not so happy later, right? Because it was never shared with them up front that there was going to be a need. And then you get into the whole, well, do they have to accommodate me if I didn't disclose? And it just becomes such an issue that shouldn't be one.
Yes.
So, you know, we certainly encourage our people to think through that. Yes, it's personal choice to disclose. We get that. However, if you're going to expect that your employer be understanding and expect that your employer allow you to utilize some sort of an accommodation, they have the right to know up front. I mean, we can't just go in and assume they're going to know everything I need if I don't tell them, you know? So that's, I think it's a responsibility, obviously, on both sides. But we just try to encourage our people to really understand. If you choose not to, here's where your employer's stance will most likely be. And then you're back to square one, right? Because nobody wants to go and apply for a job, get accepted, and then not be able to do it or not be able to perform. You know, they want to perform. They want the job, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Don't set yourself up for failure by not disclosing what you may need to be successful.
What are some barriers to employment that the disabled community face?
Well, kind of piggybacking off what Christy said, I think when it comes to that disclosure and barriers, I think education and just researching companies is so beneficial. I tell my students all the time, like, you can never overlook a company. You got to kind of dig into, do they have a foundation? Do they do this, you know, for their employees? You know, and I think if they hit a lot of those boxes, then yes, disclosing is so beneficial. But sometimes if, you know, you feel a little uneasy and you're like, I really need a job and it doesn't seem like they're too active with disability or community engagement, maybe that's just an option that you choose not to. And then, of course, barriers, just education and assumptions, right? So when I walk in with a cane, they're probably like, ah, we probably can't let him work with power tools. No, I'm joking. But it's like, hey, man, like, I do all these things at home. You know, I fix, you know, my toilets, my sinks. You know, I go out, I cut wood. You know, I got a dog. I still got to do all the dirty things that you do at home. So don't put those barriers up on me quite yet. Let me prove to you that, you know, if I'm in a warehouse, you know, I might not be able to drive the forklift unless you work, you know, on a fixed line where the forklift goes back and forth and I don't really have to drive. But I'm pretty good. I'm pretty strong. I can throw around boxes. I can lift skids. I can work with tape machines. I know how to fix tape guns, you know, certain things like that. I just think there's barriers that people maybe have some assumptions before they give out opportunities. So, and
do you think, you know, people put their assumptions on you? They'd be thinking like, maybe I can do that, so, you know, he probably can't do that. So I think sometimes that they put those misperceptions on us because they don't know that how they would do, you know, things without sight. So
yeah,
I agree with that for sure.
I said this quote and I truly live by it. It's like, don't let your vision be your variable for success, right? Mm-hmm. I see so many people see something like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do that, or I'm never going to be able to accomplish that, or I can't do that. And it's like, man, I work with my hands. I can feel some things that maybe you are putting up your blockers before you actually dive into it. So like you said, right, you know, they're putting up their barriers because maybe it's something they can't do. It's like, you know, maybe it you know, I've been trained. I've went through rehabilitation programs. I've done this work before I lost my vision at a high level. So let me try to figure it out. Don't be so quick to grab my hand. You know, I'm a pretty good problem solver. So I think those are some of the barriers that I see right away.
I would add too, Aaron, speaking of the youth, I think sometimes those assumptions can be from the parent's perspective as well, that maybe the parent assumes, right, well, my child may not ever be able to do fill in the blank because they're also operating from maybe no other experience of another blind or low vision child. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they're the first ones they know. They don't know anyone who's blind. They just assume, you know, well, hey, maybe my kid will never be able to live without me, or maybe they're going to have to live at home. They're not going to be able to live in an apartment with their friends when they graduate high school, or they're not going to be able to live in the dorm on college. They're going to have to go to a school close by. You know, I think sometimes those natural assumptions happen with our parents. I know we talk about that. And when Aaron said he likes to fail, he tells his students that all the time. You know, it's okay to fail. It's okay to not have somebody do this for you. You know, you're going to have to learn to be independent. And they see Aaron modeling that way too. But I think that's an interesting dynamic we see. It's not just employers, but sometimes it's family as well, placing those assumptions on the individual. And even if they don't realize that they're doing it, you know, because I don't think anyone's intending to limit someone, but they operate from those assumptions on their own perspective. Well, I don't know how I would be able to do laundry if I couldn't see, as opposed to understanding that there's actually a way to do it. You know, there's a way to label your machines or, but yeah, I think it definitely, the barriers can sometimes start at home. And then of course we see them certainly in the hiring process as well.
Yeah. And that goes back to how technology is really leveling the playing field. And right now with, you know, the increase of technology comes the increase of independence for people who are blind or have other significant disabilities as they become adults. You know, we don't have to rely on our family members as much with technology. We want to, you know, go shopping. We could do that, you know, via an app on our phone mm-hmm. nowadays. So technology, like I said, has really opened up the world a lot for, I believe, for people with various disabilities. And now they're able to, you know, be even more resourceful, because we are resourceful as a person who was blind. We have to be resourceful thinking outside the box all the time. So,
yeah, I think from what I've heard people say too, just especially, you know, when we hear and meet individuals coming through the rehabilitation center program, just being able to do like the what's it called, like the Kroger or Walmart grocery ordering. Heard people say, well, gosh, you know, prior to that, I had to rely on someone shopping for me or waiting for someone to be able to come get me and take mm-hmm. me to the store.
Yeah.
Whereas now with the invention of online ordering, grocery delivery, you know, I've heard people here at the center say, no, like I now have my independence to still order my own food. Thanks to an app, I know what yeah. I'm ordering. I'm getting yeah. what I want and not yeah. relying on someone else. And I can even Uber and go do my pickup, you know, just like everyone else does. Yeah. So, you know, I think sometimes that's another assumption, is that people can, you know, with a disability, blind or otherwise, that they can't grocery shop or they're always needing someone else.
Yes.
And I would say from my personal experience and meeting the people we work with and then seeing here in the center and my coworkers even, that actually, no, they don't really rely on anyone else but themselves, that it's really not any different. You know, I think sometimes we forget even that our coworkers are visually impaired, because it is just, it's so, I mean, I hate to use the word normal, but it's just, it's a non-issue. You know, we're all doing same things. It's just how we go about it might look a little different.
Yeah. So how do employers go about finding qualified applicants with disabilities?
Well, they can start by reaching out to us if they want
some shameless plug there, Ray.
Right. Yeah. Some education or qualified job applicants. You know, Kurt and I help people find jobs all different types of ways, just like anybody else. You know, I mean, we're searching the job boards, the job ads. You have to go that route just like anybody else and apply and that sort of thing. But again, you know, we try to through our employment services program here at Bosma, try to partner with businesses and you know, form relations to help them diversify their workforce if that's their initiative. So really all different types of ways that an employer can you know, hire somebody who's visually impaired, for sure.
Lots of networking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just sending us those job leads. You know, I would rather be inundated with a company sending me their openings every week than for a company to just rely on us to find it on their website. We all know that sometimes there are positions available that may not ever make it to the company's website. And so by building a relationship with, that company's HR person, or if they use a recruiter style method of looking for applicants, us having a relationship and them knowing like, hey, I can send your leads to us, that's helpful. Because with our clients, it's fluid. We have people coming into the program at the same time people are leaving the program because they go back to work. And the type of people we work with are different. Everyone is different. There is no quote unquote blind job, right? It's we're working with people that have done all types of different work. Their work histories are so different. We have people that have been in high level professional all the way to our youth coming for the first time and have never worked outside of a school internship. Our people are fluid in terms of what their expertise is. And so by having a nice network of connection and getting variety of job openings sent to us, I may not have somebody right now with that experience, but that doesn't mean in a few weeks we get somebody in and they are the right fit and they're looking for that, or they know someone, like Kurt said, networking. They happen to know somebody at that company. Just sharing with us is so important. And if you're not sure, I love the phone calls that say, I want to know more. That's really where I think it starts, is just being willing to have that initial conversation to remove the assumptions that we know are there.
Before I get you guys out of here today, what can people with disabilities teach those without disabilities?
Oh,
You
wow.
got to educate you, man. Like every time I get an Uber, they always ask me, they see the cane, they see me standing outside. It's like, and then they're like, well, some people are like, what can you see? Or I'll have my, softball bats with me. And they're like a little confused that a guy that can't see has two softball bats with him. And I'm like, yeah, I play an adaptive softball league for the visually impaired. I work with the youth for kiddos that are visually impaired. There's all kinds of adaptive things out there for you. And, talking about your eye conditioning and just practicing that self-advocacy every time I'm in an Uber, because you never know who they're going to pick up next. They might be like, I gave a ride to a guy that is visually impaired and he's going to, this school to work with these kiddos. And you know, might be talking to, a CEO or someone at a high level that can really influence, or, picking up a person downtown. And it's like just spreading that education of, we're still out there fighting the good fight, living a full functioning independent life, dealing with the same problems of having to replace your stupid gutters and your heat pumps and things like that. And it's like, man, like, yes, I'm visually impaired, but I'm still out here living a full functioning life, still running into delayed flights and turbulence on the way back from Las Vegas and being terrified. But it's like, yeah, but so are the people around me. So it's just, I think education is just the main push, and being able to just advocate for yourself. That's always where I start with my kiddos. It's like, how do you feel about your eye condition? How do you describe your eye condition to an individual that's never been around a visually impaired person? And that's usually our first step when it comes to any kind of coaching with our kiddos and adults. And it's just like, you can't be mad at them if you've never disclosed or educated them if they make a mistake. And I think that's a mentality that a lot of us need to transition over. Yes, it can get daunting to always talk about your eye condition and making it, a topic in the car or in a room. But at the same time, you got to look at it the other way. It's like, you are helping break down barriers because you are discussing something that needs to be discussed. Don't put up those barriers. Education is going to break those down by just helping people understand that we can do a lot, and we do a lot, and we're not just blind at work, we're blind at home, and we're still doing all the things that you do, just at a different area and a kind of a different technique. So I think that's a big one.
All right. Well, with that note, I'm going to pass it over to Christy. How can they get in contact with the employment service team if they want to learn more about employing individuals who are blind or visually impaired?
Yes, of course. Well, the first resource I want to share is our awesome website. We have so much great information available on our website. So if you go to www.bosma.org/center, you will find information for all of our programs, including employment services and youth. I also welcome that phone call conversation we talked about. You can reach me directly at 317-704-8250 or by email at kristyr@bosma.org. And that's kristyr@bosma.org.
Well, once again, thank you for coming on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the Navigating Blindness podcast from Apple, Google, and SoundCloud. And make sure you're following us on all social media platforms. And we'll talk to you next month. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.